Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Talks in Seoul on the projected withdrawal of 33,000 American ground troops from South Korea ended today on an upbeat note. Senior U.S. officials say they produced basic agreement on the specifics of the move. The first increment, about 6,000 troops, will leave by the end of next year. The second, totaling 8,000 or 9,000, will be out in 1980. The third and largest group, 2 years later. A communique says the United States and South Korea have agreed to form a combined military command, and Secretary of Defense Harold Brown emphasized once again that the withdrawal of ground forces means no lessening of this country's determination to safeguard South Korea against invasion from the North. We'll hear about that from Ike Pappas.
Secretary Brown told reporters at the end of the conference the most important aspect of the two-day talks on the American pullout was the renewal of America's commitment to the defense of South Korea. There have been fears that the U.S. withdrawal of ground forces means the end of America's defense of South Korea. But Brown said American air and naval forces will still be here and the United States will act promptly if South Korea is attacked. He stopped short, however, of saying the United States has guaranteed the South Koreans that American ground forces would be returned to South Korea if the North Koreans attacked. On nuclear weapons, Brown said South Korea will continue to have a place under the protective nuclear umbrella of the United States, but he said he believed South Korea can be adequately defended without the use of nuclear weapons. Responding sharply to criticism that the United States is weakening in its determination to honor its mutual defense treaties, Brown said that thousands of dead and wounded of the Vietnam War attest to the fact that America observes its commitment to other countries and that no one should have any doubts about America keeping her commitment to South Korea. Ike Pappas, CBS News, Seoul.
Brown and his delegation have now flown to Tokyo to brief Japanese officials on the talks in Seoul. Italian Prime Minister Giulio Andreotti arrives at the White House today for talks with President Carter. And CBS News White House correspondent Bob Schieffer sums up the administration's view of this latest foreign visitor.
The administration considers Andreotti the best Italian prime minister to come to power in a quarter of a century. One senior aide calls him a serious man who deserves to be taken seriously. One of the main things the president will try to do during their talks here is to make sure Andreotti understands that is the U.S. view. The Italians felt their role was somewhat downgraded during the recent summit in London, and one official here says, "We understand the fragility of the Italian ego." So one of the president's chief aims today will be to stress that the United States considers Italy just as important as its other European allies. The administration believes Andreotti has a good chance to bring much-needed economic reform to Italy, and officials here are anxious for him to succeed. They feel the best way they can help is to give Andreotti a strong show of support while he's in Washington, support which the administration believes will strengthen Andreotti's position back home. In the long run, they argue, that will be the most effective way to prevent the powerful Italian Communist Party from gaining even more influence than it already enjoys. Bob Schieffer, CBS News, Washington.
Official sources in Madrid and Paris this morning report that the suspected kidnappers of Fiat executive Luchino Ravelli Beaumont have been arrested in Spain and a $2 million ransom has been recovered in Switzerland. Ravelli Beaumont, who headed Fiat's French operations, was abducted April 13th in Paris. He was released in good health 89 days later. No new fighting is reported today along the frontier between Egypt and Libya. Egyptian President Sadat declared a ceasefire Sunday after 6 days of desert warfare. Libyan strongman Muammar Gaddafi has not done likewise, but Arab mediators are in Tripoli trying to persuade Gaddafi to follow suit. And as we hear from Doug Tunnell in Beirut, attention is now turning to another of the Middle East's uneasy frontiers.
A Beirut newspaper this morning reported that the United States and the Soviet Union have reached agreement on a proposal to position United Nations forces along the tense Lebanese-Israeli border. Al-Anwar newspaper quoted diplomatic sources here as saying that the proposal is to be discussed when Secretary of State Cyrus Vance visits the Middle East early next month. The border area is the scene of a lingering guerrilla war between Palestinian and Lebanese right-wing gunmen. The Syrian units of the Arab peacekeeping forces here, which successfully stopped the fighting elsewhere in Lebanon, have yet to intervene in the border region. Israel has warned the Syrians to keep their distance from the frontier. Some powerful Lebanese politicians, both Christian and Muslim, have recently expressed their approval of stationing UN troops in the south, but it is a highly sensitive issue in Lebanon now, and some government officials appear less convinced that a United Nations presence along the Israeli frontier would stop the inter-Arab hostilities there. Doug Tinnell, CBS News, Beirut.
U.N. Ambassador Andrew Young addressed the National Urban League in Washington last night, some hours after President Carter responded, mildly in public, more sharply in private, to criticism of his handling of minority problems by the Urban League's executive director, Vernon Jordan. Bernard Kelb reports on Young's appearance.
The question being asked in the audience was whether Young would echo President Carter or Vernon Jordan. It was answered within the first few minutes of Young's 50-minute speech. He defended the administration's approach in trying to achieve its social and economic goals, and he criticized, without being specific, what he called an attempt to generate some dissension somewhere in the Democratic coalition that elected Jimmy Carter president. He was later asked by this reporter whether, given Jordan's criticism of the president's domestic programs, there was a risk of the black community becoming alienated from the Carter administration.
Not a chance. Got nowhere to go. But even so, I think there's a better response to this administration generally. I would say that if you look at this administration in terms of the progress made in 8 months, then everybody would have to say that we're moving in the right direction.
As for Jordan's criticism, Young said these were disagreements among friends. Bernard Kalm, CBS News, Washington.
But that's not the way the president put it. After yesterday's address to the Urban League, Mr. Carter told Jordan that his criticism was, quote, damaging to the hopes and aspirations of poor people. And administration sources say the president told his cabinet that Jordan's remarks were not justified. There was another accident last night along the Alaska pipeline. Ted Lane of station KFRB reports from Fairbanks.
Official concern about the vulnerability of the Trans-Alaska pipeline was punctuated last night when an explosive device was detonated along the pipeline route. Alaska state troopers say insulation around the pipe was damaged by a blast of some sort. The FBI was called in to aid in the investigation. The explosion occurred about 17 miles north of Fairbanks. Alaska Pipeline Company officials say the mainline pipe was not damaged, there was no oil spilled, and the pumping of oil to Valdez was not interrupted. But pipeline security officials sealed off the area. The problem of protecting the 800-mile line has been given considerable attention by pipeline and federal officials. Over half of the line is above ground, and much of that can be reached by anyone willing to walk a few miles off a public highway. There is evidence the pipeline has been shot at repeatedly, particularly around Fairbanks, but without damage to the 1/2-inch thick steel pipe. Alyeska says it's developed an adequate and practical security plan, but won't discuss the details of it. So it's not known whether incidents like the one last night result in increased security efforts or not. This is Ted Lane for CBS News, Fairbanks, Alaska.
A highly publicized event is coming up tonight in Cuba. Ed Rabel, reporting from Camagüey, tells us about it.
A quarter of a million Cubans are expected to be present in Camagüey's newly constructed Plaza of the Revolution when Prime Minister Fidel Castro speaks tonight. Hundreds of thousands of others will watch on Cuban television a special broadcast of the event, the high point of the celebration commemorating the 1953 Castro-led attack on the Moncada Barracks. It is the 24th anniversary of the attack, which is regarded here as the beginning of Castro's revolution. United States newsmen were specially invited by the Castro regime to cover the celebration, which comes about a month before Cuba and the U.S. are scheduled to exchange special consular-level diplomats. That anticipated exchange, the recent quick release by the Cubans of a U.S. fishing boat they seized, and the solicitous attitude towards the U.S. press are all seen here by diplomats as moves by Castro to ensure the continuation of the warming up process of relations between Havana and Washington. Ed Rabel, CBS News, Camagüey, Cuba.
Officials in Taiwan report major damage to the island's economy from a typhoon that struck there yesterday, killing more than 30 people, injuring thousands, and disabling half of the island's factories. It's described as the most powerful typhoon in Taiwanese history.